This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right, let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, I guess congratulations to the Kansas Jayhawks, the national champions of college basketball. And what a wild game last night. You know, when you have a game where one of the teams wins in a comeback fashion, right, whether it's the Patriots in the Super Bowl or now Kansas coming down from 15 points, there's always a two-sided analysis that needs to take place. One, how in the world did you overcome a 15-point deficit in the second half? But then there's the other side that asks the question, how did you get down by 15 points to begin with in the first place? And there's a lot of layers to this basketball game, I think there is to dissect. For every great comeback, there's a great collapse, right? For every Patriots comeback in a Super Bowl, there's a collapse of the Atlanta Falcons. Last night, North Carolina collapsed in the second half. A 15-point lead that they lost really quickly. It wasn't like a long, slow erosion of that lead. That game was very manageable for Kansas rather quickly in the second half. And then it went back and forth to a point where Kansas was able to get the lead, stay the lead. North Carolina just kind of had a messy possession at the end. And now Kansas and Bill Self are national champions. And for Bill Self, it's national championship number two. And get this, guys, he's only Jay Wright, Rick Pitino, and Bill Self. Those are the only coaches left in Division I that have more than one national title. Those are the only three guys in the country. So winning a national championship, as we have said, a lot is very difficult to do in college basketball. A lot of it is the depth of talent around the country. The other is this quirky tournament that puts you in a one and out situation that you have to navigate through, meaning you've got to win five really, really tough games if you're one of the top seeds. You usually get by your first game, maybe even your second game. So maybe four and a half really tough games en route to the championship. It's very, very difficult to do. The fact that Kansas has gone to the tournament time and time again as a number one seed in the region and has only pulled off two of these under Bill Self, four as a school, is pretty mind-boggling to think that they have yet to turn that corner and get multiple championships. But how did they do it? We'll talk about that coming up next. And how did North Carolina fall apart? As Wake Up Call continues with Tony D and Ron Culver.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue along. It is Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. So congratulations to Kansas. What a game last night. What a comeback in the second half. But boy, did it look like a disaster in the first half. That was a absolute mess of a first half for the Jayhawks. As I said at the top of the hour, for every great comeback, there's a great collapse, but there's also two sides to a comeback. One, you have to have a deficit to come back from, and how in the world did you get there? Kansas got there by playing miserable in the first half. They were up 7-0 in that game and then fell apart. Sloppy, dumb basketball, taking bad shots, trying to get it down low, not being able to get McCormick into that game, just could not figure out how to get rebounds. They were getting blown away on the offensive glass. North Carolina was hitting their shots, felt really confident. Kansas was just too quick on those offensive possessions. Their speed and their transition game is the best in the country. But it also hurts them at times when they try to go too fast, where they just get sloppy. And then North Carolina played really good defense. I mean, their defense was good. Again, they were getting the boards. They were getting the putback, second chance points. So Kansas finds themselves down by 15 points at halftime. And this is when people started going, well, I don't know how they're going to come back from this. Because, you know, the most anybody has ever come back in a national championship game was 10. So it didn't seem plausible that Kansas was going to come back from 15. But if you know Kansas, as I said earlier, you know that their transition game is outstanding. And if they could get that going in some capacity, they can erase that 15-point deficit. And I kind of thought that they would. I didn't think they'd win the game, but I thought that they weren't going to get blown out. I didn't think – a lot of people were like, well, they're going to win by 25, maybe 30. This is going to be a blowout. I do think if you're Bill Self, you have the talent on your team to sort of go, okay, look, it's clear when we go down low to McCormick, we can't get the buckets, right? He's getting swamped, blocked shots. We're not going to be able to do that anymore. So we've got to make some better adjustments. And they did. But the reality was they had to instill confidence. Self and his coaching staff had to instill confidence in this team to remind them that 15 points isn't really a lot when you can score as quickly as you can in transition. That's how Kansas got back into this game. Hit a couple of jumpers, got some turnovers, got some rebounds, get it out quickly down the court, get some buckets. And before you know it, they're down 9, then they're down 7, you know, and then you're just eating it away. And that's when North Carolina started to fall apart a bit. North Carolina started making some bad choices offensively. They went from shooting outside shots, which was not the thing that got them the 15-point lead in the first place. Because what got them the 15-point lead was, in the first half, they were getting Baycott involved. They were getting Mannix involved. They were really sweeping that offensive glass. I mean, it was the second champ in the first half was crazy, absolutely crazy. And they were really able to generate pressure on the interior, drive to the lane. And then they started shooting from the outside, and they were starting to miss, and Kansas were getting rebounds and pushing it out. And then next thing you know, this game became very, very interesting. But it never got to a point where Kansas was really pulling away. Credit North Carolina. They watched a 15-point lead disappear, but they managed to stay in a back-and-forth affair. And it was just in the end, Kansas was just a little too strong. But there are a couple of things. Again, North Carolina, North Carolina in this tournament were a polished team. I mean, they really had their ducks in a row, if you will. I mean, they beat UCLA, they beat Baylor. They took care of St. Peter's when other teams couldn't take care of St. Peter's. You know, you can look at St. Peter's and go, yeah, you know, this clock struck midnight. It happens to all of these kind of 15, 13, 14 seeds that make it this far. But the reality was they took care of St. Peter's when Purdue couldn't, when Kentucky couldn't, when Murray State couldn't. And then they beat Duke. And I thought yesterday, as I said, I don't think North Carolina is going to have a hangover in this game. You know, reload the musket, as Patrick Stevens said yesterday. I thought they would come out and play. It's for the national championship. If you don't know where you are at that specific moment, if you don't know on a Monday night at 8:20 Central Time in New Orleans that you're playing for the national title and you think that you've already won something by beating Duke, I can't imagine any kid on that team felt that this game was second to what they experienced on Saturday. Yeah, there was a lot of motion in Saturday. It's your rival. You end Coach K, his career on a loss. You're the one that beat him. But you are playing for a national title. And North Carolina looked like a national championship team in the first half. Hubert Davis even said at one point he didn't like the fact that people were thinking that they wouldn't play hard because they had already won their game against Duke. Because North Carolina has a number of national championships on their resume. They were going for their 7th in school history. And so they looked ready for the moment. But in the second half, and this is what happens. It happened to the Atlanta Falcons in the Super Bowl. It happens when you overcome these kind of deficits. When the wheels fall off a little bit, they fall off and, you know, just they derail everything. So I'm going to give them credit because even though they had a 15-point lead that got erased pretty rapidly, in the end, they did get into a back-and-forth battle. But they just ran out of gas. Baycott, you know, got hurt with less than a minute to go. You got leaky. He got in foul trouble early, you know, in the game. He got his 4th foul as McCormick kind of went down on him. And then Agbaji was able to draw some fouls. So Leaky Black, I should say. He was the one that got his 4th foul. They took him out. So some things that were working for North Carolina weren't working in the second half. They couldn't get it. They couldn't get the offensive rebounds like they did. And what Kansas was experiencing, and this is, again, this is just sort of a study in how any type of comeback, it doesn't even have to, it can be baseball, it can be basketball, it can be football. When you feel like the momentum is coming, it comes in waves. And that's what Kansas was feeling, right? Like, you look at a guy like Christian Brown. He was a guy that drove to the lane, got baskets, got to the line, got hit threes. He got that offense going. And then McCormick took over. You know, he had 9 points in the second half. Brown had 10. Remy Martin pitched in 11. Jalen Wilson chipped in 11. These guys all came alive in the second half because the momentum was on their side. Things that weren't working were working, and it just carried over. And again, like the Patriots and Tom Brady in the Super Bowl against Atlanta, when you start completing passes and start getting yards and start scoring, you find that your defense kicks up a notch, your offense is on a roll. That's what Kansas did. Everything was clicking. And I tell you this, I usually don't have a lot of emotion for teams I don't care about. And I'm not a fan of North Carolina. I'm not a fan of Kansas. But I felt bad for North Carolina. I thought that was their night. I really thought that that was their night. I knew Kansas would make a run in the second half. They were too good of a team to get blown out. And they were not going to get blown out by 30 points against North Carolina. They just weren't. But I did think North Carolina would hang on and win the game.
I thought the same thing. I mean, watching that game, I mean, North Carolina came out on fire. Kansas was missing a bunch of shots. But you knew that Kansas was going to figure it out.
Yeah. I was telling somebody on private message on Facebook last night. I said, Kansas is – they're like, well, what – he said – what,
it's
game
over?
And I said, it's not over. I said, no, watch the second half. I said, Kansas can score in bunches, and they can score in bunches quick. Let's see how this plays out. Let's see how the first couple of minutes of the second half go.
Right. And honestly, I wasn't even surprised that Kansas was able to come back. But what I was surprised at was that North Carolina, it was like they just forgot everything.
Yeah, they really were settling for jump shots. And I really thought what worked for them in the first half.
It was almost
if they had continued to do that, they could have won the game. Maybe. And I keep bringing up the Super Bowl between Patriots and the Falcons, but it was like the first thing I kept thinking about when I thought about how teams collapse. I mean, 15 points is not a super comfortable lead. I mean, it's a comfortable lead, but it's not super comfortable. It's not like they were up by 25.
Yeah.
You know, like 15 can be erased. Once you get it into single digits, and it's not that much to get it into single digits from 15, then it's a very manageable basketball game. But what you just lose the thing that got you. Like when we talk about that Super Bowl 51, what do we talk about? Atlanta went away from the run, right? Atlanta was couldn't control the clock. They stopped doing the things that was able to pick up yards. They had committed penalties.
They got them there.
They allowed sacks, right? Like, they contributed to their own demise. It wasn't the Patriots doing everything right. The Falcons had to do stupid things, too. North Carolina did stupid things, right? Caleb Love is phenomenal, but he hasn't met a shot he doesn't love. no pun intended, he took a 50-foot three-pointer at the end of that game when they could have drove the lane, got a bucket, extended it with the free throw line. He's trying to tie the game up with a bomb, like a Steph Curry bomb.
Yeah.
Like, why isn't Hubert Davis calling timeout to reset that offense and just to remind his kids, get the bucket first, let's send them to the line, let's extend the game this way. Because if you're chucking it from 50 feet out and they get an offensive rebound, we're losing. Because if we send them to the line on a missed shot, they can win this game because they'll be up two possessions. Let's get the 2 points. There's plenty of time on the clock. Let's send them to a line and see if we can make it. Let's see if we can get the ball back down three or maybe even down two with a chance to tie.
And that's
why are we throwing it from 50 feet away?
And that's what I mean by panicking, because it seemed like as soon as the second half started, Kansas went on this little mini run that they just immediately like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, what's going on? What's happening?
Right. Yep.
You know, if they just slowed it down, settled it down, and got it back into their rhythm, they probably would have won this game.
Yeah, because, again, this was
a 15-point lead. Now, I'm like you. They're not going to win by – I don't think they were going to win by double digits.
No. But, thought that they would be a run, and then North Carolina would make a run, and
right.
It would be 7 or 8.
And then Kansas would run out of steam because they had to make up 15 points, and then just towards the end of the game, it was just too much for them. And
right.
You could see, but it wasn't.
Nope. They bombed them in the second half. I mean, they bombed them. in that second half. I mean, again, credit to everybody on that team. We'll talk more about Bill Self coming up on Twitter at Tony D Radio at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Your thoughts on the national championship game last night, if you want to give us your thoughts on how that game went down. More on that. We will continue throughout. We got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up in hour number two. We'll talk the Masters, and we'll even talk Major League Baseball because, by the way, opening day is Thursday as we continue. It's Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsnap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, talking about last night's 72-69 win by Kansas over North Carolina. As I said at the top of the hour, Bill Self, there's only three guys right now in Division I coaching that have won more than one national championship. Rick Pitino, who's at Iona now. There is Bill Self. And the other one is Jay Wright at Villanova. Those are the only three. It's really hard to win a national title. Really hard. But you know what? Here's the thing. I like it that way. I do. I like it that way. As I said this yesterday, I think it's unfair to take college football's playoff and college basketball's playoff and say one is better than the other or one should copy the other. Like, first of all, in basketball, the genie's out of the bottle, right? We're never going to reduce the tournament. That would be insane. Can you imagine if the NCAA said 68 teams, way too much. We're only doing 16, and it's going to be done in over 4 days, and then we're done. The glory of March Madness is its large tent that invites. I don't want to get it too crazy. As I said one time, I think I said this when you were out. I don't want the tournament to be 128, right? Because, you know, everybody's like, well, this team got hosed, and we should have. Because, and one of the main reasons that I don't want 128 is because I think 68 teams, and again, that's pushing it, because 64 is better, but 68's fine. We're going to do that play-in tournament. That's cool. But 68 fits on a legal sheet of paper. I mean, a regular size regulation letter paper. Can you imagine filling out a bracket with 128 teams? Like, you need a magnifying glass to write down all your little teams, like Wisconsin over New Hampshire. Like whisk, and it would be too small. No, I like it. I think it's tough. It's supposed to be tough. It's supposed to be a grind. Kansas has entered this tournament many, many times as a number one seed in the region. They would have been the number one overall seed in 2020 had there been a tournament. But many, many, many times Bill Self couldn't get it done. This is his first title since 2008. That's ages ago. Ages ago. Like, think about Kansas in college basketball, Ron. Think about how consistently good Kansas is, right? They're always winning the Big 12. They're always a number one seed in this thing. They're always in the top 10, top 5 of the AP college basketball poll throughout the season. Now, put that equivalent to college football. Imagine if you're a coach at Georgia or USC or Oklahoma, and you constantly were going to the college football playoff all the time. And you were one of the top teams all the time. You bring in the best recruits. You're one of the best teams in college football constantly. But you have one title to show for it since 2008. How long would you last at that football factory that you're churning out? But in college basketball, there's an understanding that college basketball championships are really hard to get. They're difficult. It's everyone's involved. Everyone who's good is involved. You don't say that about college football. There might be a really good team at 5. There might be a really good team at 6, but they don't get to play. There's only 4. But in college basketball, anybody that's really good, decent, really good, they're in this thing. And you got to go through good team after good team after good team after maybe the first round or two. And it's hard to keep winning those kind of games. And so, and you know what's funny is that Bill Self even talked about this at the beginning of the season. This really isn't even some of his best teams that he has had. And it's funny because a lot of guys who win national titles have said that. This may not be the most talented team we have, but they have heart, right? This may not be the most talented, explosive team they have, but they have determination, right? Coaches talk about this a lot with their championship team. It may not be the best recruiting class we've ever brought, but there's something about this team and this particular team that got it done. That's college basketball in a nutshell. Try to say that in college football, right? We talk about Alabama winning a lot of championships. All those Alabama teams that won championships, you can compare them to other Alabama teams. But I really doubt Nick Saban is like, I can't believe we won. Holy cow. We brought in nobody, right? This isn't even close to some of the best teams we had coming in. Like most of the time in college football, when you win a national championship, it is because you've brought the best of the best to the program. And that gelled in the right way. Sometimes a program like North Carolina, Kansas, a Duke, UCLA, some of these teams that have been in our lives in the college basketball world winning titles over the decades, sometimes they haven't brought the best of the best they've ever put together, and yet they've won. And sometimes the best teams they've ever put together have fallen short. That is what this tournament is. And let's get to Bill Self for a second, because he had two choices at halftime. So he goes into the locker room at halftime, and he could do two things. He could rip his team top to bottom, right? Tear them to shreds. Sloppy basketball. I don't like saying this about college athletes, but I'm going to say it because I think it fits. Kansas played stupid basketball in the first half. That was dumb basketball. Too quick on the jumpers, committing dumb fouls. I mean, really, really not pacing themselves. Ridiculous, ridiculous decisions that they made on the offensive side of the ball, right? So Bill Self could have gone into the halftime and said, tearing this team to pieces, frustrating, angry, awful Kansas basketball. It's not even what we're about. Blah. But he also knew something else. One, there's really no learning curve here other than trying to get them to do something in the second half of the game. The season's over, right? No matter what happens, there's only 20 minutes of basketball left, right? This isn't going to be one of those things where he's going to try to get them back in this game because in 3 days, they're going to be playing Texas Tech in Lubbock, and good Lord, you know, that's a tough team. No. This is it. It's 20 minutes of basketball. For some of the kids in the locker room, that's it. It's all they're going to play. And for some, they have gotten to this point where, you know, they're so close. They've gotten to the finals. They haven't gone to the finals since 2012. And now they're 20 minutes away from figuring out their destiny. Self chose the exact opposite. Self chose that he went into that locker room saying to his guys, I absolutely believe you can get back into this game. It would be ridiculous if you didn't think you could get back into this game. He told them that in 2008, Kansas was down 9 with 2 minutes to go. Mario Chalmers hit the jumper that put the game into overtime, and they beat Memphis in OT to win the national title. He said to them, which is harder, being down 9 with 2 minutes remaining or being down 15 with 20 minutes remaining? And they all said 15. He said, then go do it. And that was the smart play. Tearing this team up for dumb fouls and dumb play, right, could have been detrimental. Maybe the kids don't respond in that particular way. But what he did was he reminded them who they are. You're Kansas. You're the best transition team in the country. 15 points to us, nothing. Nothing. Go out there and play Kansas basketball. Let's see what happens if you do. And they did. They did. Because as that deficit was being eaten away, you could really feel like that was a different team. And North Carolina, on the other hand, starting to get out of the game a little bit. They weren't as effective on the glass. They weren't as effective getting the ball inside. They started settling for jumpers that didn't go down. And next thing you know, this game is tied. And this game is, you know, 1-point contest or 1-possession contest. And then we had a ball game. All right. Coming up next, we're going to stay with college basketball a bit. We got some other things to get to. But Bill Self, as I mentioned earlier, did rally the team. But what does it say that we still aren't really sure exactly how it's going to go down for Bill Self and the Kansas program with that investigation? Doesn't even matter anymore. We'll discuss that next on Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
Wake-Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, as we continue along, at Ron Culver, that is Ron with two N's. All right, so Bill Self got the trophy last night. Mark Emmert called them the Kansas City Jayhawks.
Yay!
How awesome is that?
Wait, that's not right?
Yeah, Kansas City Jayhawks. How could he screw that up? Unless you do it on purpose, Mark Emmert.
Maybe he's just trying to help Bill Self out, because the FBI will now go and track him down in Kansas City.
Yeah, in Kansas City, maybe so. They won't go to Lawrence, right? I'll head over to Kansas City to try to find, you know, Fog Allen.
Start knocking door to door. Is a Bill Self here?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, a couple of years ago, the FBI had this internally, you know, in looking into college basketball, and a number of programs fell under the sword, but nothing really came out of it. Like, let's be honest, nobody really went to the woodshed on this. It was about 5 years ago that they put this together, and the FBI, you know, at a time when the kind of violations warranted an FBI investigation, which is kind of weird, but nevertheless, like, it is kind of bizarre when you think about it. When the FBI is getting involved in college athletic recruiting and whatnot, and improper payments or whatever they're looking into, it's kind of weird. But nevertheless, they looked into Kansas, and Kansas, of course, has this cloud over its head because there's been a number of level five infractions that have been levied against the program. Like, they've been, you know, accused of the program, but nothing has come about it. Now, I wonder, and I'm asking this, does it seem to matter anymore? Is that a relic? Is that a dinosaur of a time when we sort of cared about these kind of things? Whereas now it's like we don't care about these things. Like, Ron and I have had a real fun time with Will Wade, who just recently lost his job at LSU. But at the same time, it took a while for Will Wade to lose his job, right? Bill Self was never really in any jeopardy, and he's absolutely in no jeopardy now. Because in the end, this is what matters the most.
Nor will his recruiting take a hit.
No, and it hadn't before. Like, Remy Martin transferred in from Arizona State. He's like, I have no problem playing. Mr. Kansas, Christian Brown, he went to Kansas. He had no problems going to Kansas. Even though this was started when he was playing in high school, winning national titles in Overland Park. Right, like, Kansas is going to continue to bring in top talent. They're going to be one of the top teams in the nation. They'll probably be one of the top seeds going into next year's tournament. Doesn't matter who they have. They find a way to get talent. That's the way it is. And now he's the national champs again. They're the national champs again. And by the way, again, 2008, my God, that's a good chunk of change ago. And Bill Self is riding along. Right. It just, to me, again, in the ever-changing landscape of college athletics, if you're an athletic director, what's easier to sell to the people that really do matter the most? And that's the people who continue to put in huge amounts of money into the program. What's easier to sell? That we've had a couple of level five level, you know, violations, and we got to get rid of a coach, or we just won a national championship with this coach, despite the fact the FBI has been looking into him for a number of years. Like, take your pick.
I mean, just phrasing it that way is so funny.
Right. I mean, this is all you live for. The reason you give $1 million, $2 million, $10 million, whatever it is, to the athletic program, this is why you do it. This is why you do it, so that one shining moment is being aired and everybody knows you're the champs. And you only get a few of these in your lifetime. You know, the last team to repeat was Florida, 2006, 2007. You want to talk about feeling like it was forever ago that Kansas won a national title? It was forever ago when Florida won to be the repeat champions of college basketball. Kansas may never see this again in our lifetime. Kansas may win five more. I have no idea. But both are reasonable expectations. Right? Now, you wouldn't say that in college football about Alabama. Alabama lost the title game to Georgia. Imagine if I said Nick Saban you'll likely never see Nick Saban win another national title again. That would be insane.
But it is possible Bill Self doesn't win a national title again. Right? Maybe, but maybe he wins next year. But it's also equal that he may never win it again because it's that difficult to do. And so if you have a coach that's capable of doing this, you keep him. You ride the storm out. Right? The FBI will level its penalties if they do. Well, the NCAA will level previous penalties whenever that happens. Who knows if it ever will happen. But when you're in a short list, when your coach is on a short list of active coaches that have won multiple national titles with Jay Wright and Rick Pitino, then you keep him. You keep him. Because he gives you a chance every single tournament to win the whole thing. And that to me is the silliness of all of it. Like no one's angered like that anymore. Yeah, like listen, and I'm not doing this like it was better in my day, because I don't think it was better in my day, but I can remember people treating violations of the NCAA like they were treasonous acts against the integrity of sports. Right? Oh my God, is schools paying players under the table? This is a Sports Illustrated expose that has to be uncovered. Sports Illustrated has learned that a booster gave such and such a player $500 after they won a game against Virginia. And you'd go, oh my God, this is unbelievable.
Can't wait to watch the 30 for 30 on this one.
Yeah, I can't. We're gonna shut the program down. It's being run by renegades, right? I mean, that's the way it was. Ron and I joked about this a while back, about future generations looking back on the SMU scandal of the 80s going, really? They shut a football program down for that? Because if you tell somebody 20 years from now, like a kid who's like 2-3 years old, when they get to be 18, 19, and you say, yeah, SMU football, they shut it down in the 1980s, that kid could go, was everybody like, was there murder involved? Were they selling drugs? Like, were they beating up women? No. They just gave a car to Eric Dickerson and they gave some players money.
Think about it.
Like, what?
What school was it where a player killed another player?
Baylor.
Okay, Baylor's a perfect example for this, right? Because that was Baylor basketball, right?
That was Baylor basketball.
Yeah, where a player killed another player. And then you look at Baylor's football team, who, you know, the coach was covering up
sexual assaults. Yep.
That program is still alive very well. Almost won the Big 12 last year.
Yep. Still kicking around. Could have won the Big 12. And the basketball team emerged as a national champion years later.
Yep.
Right? SMU has yet to be a football power because they shut it down from giving athletes money. Right? But again, think about if you watch that 30 for 30 Pony Access, and you know one of the things that they emphasized at the beginning of that documentary was that sports in the Dallas area was what sold newspapers. So there was a bidding war for really talented columnists and reporters who were all – so one, you had almost a perfect storm of this national power that was doing – illegal things in terms of the NCAA, right? Paying players under the table, giving people cars, right? You know, all of that to bring in an Eric Dickerson, a Craig James, talent like that. But then you had a bevy of reporters all chomping at the bit to be the first to break the story. So you had a whole bunch of people descending on that school to try to uncover anything that they could on the SMU scandal. So that's what was going down. Now, like we talk about with Kansas, here comes the FBI, right? The FBI's got stuff on Arizona. They got stuff on LSU. They got stuff on Kansas. Is anything going to happen to Kansas? Absolutely not.
Nothing.
Not one thing is going to happen to them.
And it took Will Wade to have a losing season.
Absolutely.
For them to go, oh, okay, yeah, we can fire you.
Exactly. They did not get rid of Will Wade when the crap was hitting the fan. They got rid of Will Wade because he didn't win enough basketball games. Bill Self just won a national title. He just bought himself another decade.
Yeah.
Right? Like, these guys are untouchable.
Scott Miller got ousted, what was that, Arizona State, right?
Arizona. The new coach got him the number one seed.
Not only that, but for Scott Miller, what was it, Was he out of a job for 2 months?
Nope. Jumped right. Two months, right. Yeah. Jumped right back in.
Maybe 2 months. I mean, it took no time at all for him to go, Xavier was like, hey, come on back.
Come on back.
We'll take you.
Sure. They're well connected. Right. And that's just the reality of all of this. And again, I can remember scandals in college sports because, you know, again, I was an avid reader of Sports Illustrated when I was a kid. There was some serious stuff that was going on in college athletics. If you really want to dive into the history of some of these schools and some of the things that went down, I'll tell you, when I was deciding to go to South Carolina, there was a big expose in South Carolina on steroids. Like there was like people in the football program were just giving steroids away. And one player almost committed suicide because of it. I mean, it was a big, big scandal. It was, I remember reading this going, oh, jaw hit the floor, right? The some of these programs that later they won titles and then what happened later, like Michigan and all that. I mean, it was, but now we're reached a point where I just don't think it has the same wow factor anymore. I think naturally as we move into NIL deals, this stuff is going to be a little bit more open. And I don't think we just care. I mean, it just doesn't
seem. No, I think that's what it is. We don't care anymore.
We just, like, again, if your rival's doing it, you may care. But I'm just talking about the just general feeling across the country on these kind of stories. It used to be outrageous. I think it's less and less and less and less outrageous.
No, in fact, like, you know, we go back to Will Wade because he's our favorite coach right now.
Right.
When LSU, when that whole thing went down, I didn't hear one school in the SEC go, see, point finger, look at him.
Of course.
They were all quiet.
You're right.
And I wonder why.
And that's the thing. It's like when going back to the SMU thing, what happened was over time, right? We took something that was outrageous and made it okay. And we've done that with a number of things, right? We've done it with marijuana. We've done it with gambling. Like now there's, you know, there is a movement to legalize drugs, all the drugs, right? I don't know if it's going to ever catch on, but there is. What happens is there just seems to be like what we considered to be wrong and out crazy is something we go, no, we're not doing that. We're not going to worry about that anymore. We're going to make that legal, et cetera. NIL is the same thing in college athletics. People used to go crazy. Now everyone's going to be doing it. And the Supreme Court said everyone should be doing it. The thing that you've prevented for so long should have been legal in the first place. Now, I don't know if you make that same equation of marijuana or gambling. There's certainly people who are against those things and believe those things lead to bad, you know, home foreclosures because of gambling addiction, lead to harder drugs because of marijuana, all of that. And those are legitimate arguments. But in the college athletic landscape, what used to get coaches in trouble, what used to get schools on probation, what used to take titles down and banners down, the things that we used to do are now becoming the norm, now becoming things you should be doing on a regular basis to your student athletes.
Yeah.
You should be finding a way to get them compensation. You should be finding people to pay them for their name, image, and likeness.
Will Reggie get his Heisman back?
Right. Yeah. One day, you hope. I hope. I don't think they should have ever taken it away in the first place. They were cowards. That's a separate entity. And they bowed down to the NCAA's ruling and said, well, we got to at least sort of follow it. If he was ineligible, then we got to take it away, when they should have said, that's a you issue. That's not an us issue. And he gets to keep his Heisman.
Yeah. People were calling for his head.
Yeah.
Oh, you should do this.
Okay.
Exactly. OJ got to keep his until he was trying to sell it or had to sell it or whatever. But OJ got to keep his. All right, we'll come back. We'll wrap up this hour and get you set for hour number two. We'll get into the Masters and Tiger possibly playing. That's also coming up with the good, the bad, and the dumb as we continue on Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, coming up in hour number two, Ryan Ballingy is going to join us. We'll talk Masters as it gets underway on Thursday. Tiger Woods played a practice round of 9 holes. We'll talk to him about Tiger's chances of playing. Is it realistic, or is the media playing wishful thinking on an incredibly hilly course? I mean, I'm hoping he plays. Don't get me wrong. I'm hoping he plays. But with Tiger, it does feel like he could do it. Like if anybody could come back 14 months after a horrific car accident that causes you to almost lose your leg and be able to walk an incredibly hilly course and play professional golf, it would be Tiger. So we'll talk to Ryan Ballingy. We've also got the good, the bad, and the dumb. We'll get more into the college basketball national title game last night.
Real quick, do you think public pressure has kind of influenced Tiger as well? Because we all want it.
I think public
and
pressure.
And you think he wants to, it's almost, that's a good question. Almost like a hero moment. Like if he sets foot on the course and say he only plays four holes and then has to bow out.
Right.
We will still sit there and revere and almost treat him like as if he was a god.
I think Tiger knows who he is. You know what I mean? Like, I think he realizes, like, you know, that people want this really badly and all of that. So I think he knows who he is, and I think he knows what it would mean. I always find it interesting watching Tiger the last few holes of the 2019 Masters when he was really looking like he was going to win that thing. He had that face, just that stoic face of like, not, mm-hmm. You know, but then that moment that he won, it just, he knew what that meant. Like he knew it wasn't just now Tiger Woods, another fifth green jacket. Everyone went, oh my God, we thought we'd never see this guy do this again. And he did, he won. And I think even you're right. Even if he just plays nine holes and quits, if we see him hit professional shots in a tournament, I think we would be like, that's incredible, because we thought he was going to be dead seeing that crash. So we'll talk about that in the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up in hour number two.